CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 162 with Dr. Joaquin Fernandez. How do we evaluate all current and all future IOLs with actual strict criteria? Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. Today, I've got a very special guest who's going to teach us a lot today, especially about a common sense way of classifying all the IOLs. That's my good friend here, Dr. Joaquin Fernandez from Spain. Welcome, Joaquin.
Hello, Dai. It's an honor to be with you. Thank you very much for your invitation.
Oh, for sure. Now, you have an incredible background. We're all physicians. So we're all MDs. We went to medical school. But you also did a PhD in applied physics. So certainly you really understand optics. You also did a master's degree at Oxford. So you've got that Oxford way of thinking. And then you also did an MBA. This is amazing.
Yes, I felt when I began my practice, Uday, I felt that all of us, if we are entrepreneurial in some way in our clinical practice, in private system here in Europe, we need to manage as a business our clinic. So I began, first of all, doing the MBA. Then I made also a master of how to manage luxury brand, you know, in Spain and in Europe. We have this balance between low cost and very differentiated way of creating patient experience. So I get immersed in this knowledge. And then Uday, I thought, even the CEO of Louis Vuitton, Bernard Arnault, they never create any business. He always needed this artisan to develop the business. So I began to thought, who is the artisan? The artisan is the doctor. The doctor applying MBA medicine, evidence-based medicine. So then I began this master of evidence-based medicine in Oslo University, and that's what's the beginning of everything today.
Right. So you did evidence-based medicine from Oxford, your master's there. And then also, you can really have great insight into the optics, because that's your PhD is in applied physics, especially for optics.
Yes, that's right. I really think in Spain we have a huge people coming of optic physics, developing the optometrist teaching on our student. So I manage this optics PhD. So I really see this deep knowledge about the performance, the profilometry of the lenses, the performance in optical bend is quite important to know. You know that all this mess that we have a lot of simultaneous vision lens with not very clear pattern, the performance, how it could be then the performance in our patient. So having this balance, I really think it's quite important.
Right. There was a landmark paper talking about the lens labyrinth. Like, it's a maze. There's so many different lenses by so many different companies, so many different claims, and we have to kind of sort it out into smart categories. So what's the big two categories? So partial and full depth.
Yes.
Tell me about those.
Excellent. This was... we analyzed the last 10 years about all the scientific paper published in PubMed around simultaneous vision lens. According to that, we create a scoping review and also a cluster analysis. A cluster analysis is a statistical methodology, try to identify with all this incredible amount of paper, try to see how to differentiate the group. So we differentiate two big groups, not because our opinion, because it was the outcomes of a statistic analysis. So we create the partial depth of field and the full depth of field. This is the differentiation is what is the amount of the defocus curve in the cutoff of 0.2 logma. This not, again, it's not our cutoff. The ISO proposed this cutoff.
So those are two big categories. So whether it's, so I guess like your monofocals or enhanced or extended or monofocal plus will be all partial depth of field. And then for the field will have steep, smooth, continuous, bifocal, trifocal, something else like this nature. Maybe one day accommodating too.
That's right. The partial depth of field for the cutoff point of 0.2 logma achieves less than 2.3 dioptries. In this group, partial, we have narrowed would be the monofocal. We were discussing the SRS, Asia Pacific Why to include the monofocal, the narrow way? Because we need a control group to all the rest to compare with it. And why not to call monofocal, Uday? Because we have to escape of the optical bank and the optics definition. Focus is a definition coming of the optical bank, not the clinical practice, okay? So we were talking about narrow way, enhanced, it would be the monofocal enhanced, but it's again, to escape for the focal, we escape for the monofocal enhanced, and extended. And why extended instead of EDOF? Because again, EDOF is extended deep of focus. So we try to escape of this concept coming from the optical bank. And in the full, we have another three group. Would be, as you said, steep, smooth, and continuous. In the difference in between the intermediate and the end. This is too big, steep, would be like this, bifocal, then smooth, then continuous.
Well, I think that's a nice way of thinking about it, because then it's easy for us to understand, but also much easier for patients to understand.
Absolutely, absolutely, Uday. And in the end, all the thing that we want it to move into the performance in the clinical practice and to have all this group. And you know, Uday, we try to introduce more parameter. We try to introduce contrast sensitivity. We also try to introduce photi phenomenon dysphotopsia. You know the difference between photi phenomenon and dysphotopsia. Photi phenomenon is the artifact in a sort of light that you can see, halo, glare, whatever. And dysphotopsia is in what amount this photi phenomenon bothered me. Okay, we try to introduce today. Do you know what happened? It was impossible. It was impossible because the dispersion in all the literature is so huge that we couldn't find outcomes. So because of that, then we published with the editor of Journal of Cataract Refractive Surgery, editorial to standardize the collecting and the reporting of the data. Let's wait that the community, scientific community, could now to develop this rigor paper. Try to create another classification with this information. To imagine today that we could give all the doctor the information about the performance in terms of the focus group, in terms of contrast sensitivity, and in terms of dysphotopsia. It would be absolutely amazing for our patient, for us to take a decision.
Well, that's the balance that. It sounds like, okay, as a patient would say, oh, I definitely want the full. Why do I only want partial? No, I want full. But they have to understand that full comes with some compromise then in terms of image quality.
Yes, absolutely. The more we want to elongate the distribution of light, of course, we are going to have more effect in photi phenomenon. Of course. And another thing, coming from the literature, we have some interesting conclusion. For example, the full depth of field lenses, overall the base in diffraction, are most sensitive to the metropy. So if you have some amount of astigmatism or the focus, could reduce the distant uncorrected visual acuity. And another thing quite interesting is that the extended lenses, we have two profiles, as you know, diffractive and refractive. Well, we discovered, seeing in the literature, that the extended refractive induce less photic phenomenon in dysphotopsia in the patient. Quite interesting. And another thing interesting is that the monofocal enhanced is going to give us only one line in intermediate vision comparison with narrower the monofocal. But this line gives to the patient 30 more independence of glasses. So it's quite interesting to try to analyze the evidence because it gives us a lot of information.
Right. And then there are other patient factors too. Like, of course, you said we have to be able to hit ametropia, so there's no residual refractive error. But also, we got to take into account patient pupil size. I did surgery for a patient recently who all the time, even at nighttime, has 2 millimeter pupils. Well, there's no point in putting in a trifocal lens. You'll never get the benefit of all the rings.
Absolutely. This is another quite important issue, Uday. The profilometry of the lens is more dependent to the pupil and to the desepentration. Are the refractive lenses in comparison with diffractive. So right. If we have big pupil is a bad business for simultaneous vision lens, because could reduce the depth of field and also could create more photo phenomenon, this photopsia in our patient. So it is quite interesting to having all this information. You know, Uday, I differentiate three type of evidence. The first type is very useful at the beginning with a lens is launched to the market. It's the information of the optical bank. This is the first ring. It's not exactly the performance, but give us some information. The second would be the trial. All these trials that we develop in our patient with this lens. Quite interesting to analyze what could be the performance with this lens. And the third rings of evidence, Uday, for me is quite important and it's not developed by now. And we need to push the industry and the research to develop. The third ring would be what biometric parameter could affect the performance of our patient with each lens in terms of pupil, as you said, instead of higher aberration, instead of decentration. All this information is quite important. Try to avoid the bad performance of our lenses. So having us this red line would be quite interesting. And we need to develop and we need to ask to the industry all this information.
Right, for sure. I like that you now published guidelines. So for future studies, we can give the data that's more easily analyzed later and then compared as well.
See, it's quite important because when you read paper in the literature, there's some mixed concept that even the research and the reviewer of the journal, a peer reviewer, don't analyze adequately. When we analyze the efficacy of the intraocular lens, we need to read the deep of focus in monocular and correct it.
Right.
But when we want to see the efficacy of the procedure is binocular with no correction. So it's quite important. What do we want to assess? The intraocular lens, monocular, and corrected. We want to analyze the procedure, binocular, and no corrected.
Right, because that's how patients are going to experience it. Binocular, uncorrected, and then you're using the two eyes together, with the brain making a composite picture in the mind, for sure.
Absolutely. And in fact, I really think this is the next step, try to reduce the photo phenomenon, this photopsia of our patient. Right. Till now, we manage the profilometry of the lenses, we manage different addiction, whatever, but I really think we are going to begin to see more and more paper analyzing and asymmetric implantation, playing with the dominant and non-dominant sensorial eye, try to reduce the dysphotopsia, probably implanting and giving the best quality of vision in the dominant sensorial eye, and in the other, try to achieve more depth of field. I really believe this is the next frontier that we are going to see in PubMed.
Yeah, I think that's gotten increasingly popular, even in my own practice, where we're doing the dominant eye, monofocal, or maybe monofocal plus, or perhaps even EDOF in the dominant eye, and then the non-dominant eye, putting in a light-splitting lens in order to give the convenience vision of, you know, mobile phones. And I think that can work reasonably well, as long as the patients don't cover one eye, cover the other, and compare the two back and forth.
Of course, we need to explain adequately. I really think this is the more interesting. And the next frontier also, I really think, is how to translate the thing that the patient understand, that the patient talk about task. They are not talking about logmar, or they are not talking about halo, you know. They're talking about task. Well, I would like to do this task, playing golf, driving at night, whatever. So we need to translate, and there's some paper quite interesting that they are translating what amount of the parameter that we know about logmar, contrasensitivity, whatever, to do these tasks that are the demanding for the patient. So this is quite interesting also paper that we are beginning to see in PubMed. And this is the key, no? How to translate their task into needs of our parameter.
Right, because we talk in, oh, what's the acuity? What's the logMAR? What's the modulation transfer function? The patients never say this. They say, how's my vision when I'm cutting my vegetables, cooking my dinner, or driving at nighttime, or playing golf? We've got to change the way we understand this because it's for patients. It's part of, you said before, giving the patients that value care and that luxury and premium experience.
Absolutely. And in fact, we can respond and we can help them to the shared decision making with evidence. You know, it's the key is escape from the field of the optical brain, escape of the opinion, and go directly to the fact, to the evidence, to the data. And it's mandatory to develop all this evidence. I really think it's going to be amazing. And Uday, another thing quite interesting, I really think, was this global consensus. ESCRS, ASCRS, Asia Pacific, LATAMSCAR, the four big continental society achieving this consensus to have this first step of a worldwide consensus in the classification are working together to continue developing all this team is absolutely amazing. In fact, the next step, you know, when we were, and I was involved in the evidence-based medicine master, I was afraid of the conflict of interest, creating relationship with industry. I really believe, Uday, that we have a chance. We have a chance of creating virtuous relationship with industry, right. Try to help our friends, our patients. And we are, for example, we are having some conversation with the industry, try to have an open and transparent relationship with all the companies to see what could be the level of evidence to classify each lens in each subgroup. So first of all, we need to create this consensus with industry and then to apply to have this big classification. And we are also working with your colleagues. We are in ASCRS, Asia Pacific and Latin America with this idea. When you could have the patient, the doctor could have a classification with all the lenses in the market to see exactly what could be the performance.
I think that's so great to have now. It's worldwide. So you have consensus basically of all the cataract and refractive societies worldwide working kind of together towards this project.
Absolutely, and we know also, ambassador, like you, Dai, for us is quite important. People like you that connect incredibly with doctor, with patient, trying to teach them, having the opportunity of you create as ambassador of the classification is an incredible situation. So thank you very much for this possibility of being here with you, the doctor.
Yeah, we all learn together. Now, let's talk more about the luxury experience because my surgery center is in Beverly Hills. I need to give these patients a really incredible experience. Yes, of course, the surgery has to be top-notch. You got to do beautiful surgery for sure. You have to have great surgical outcomes. But it's more than that. It's the whole experience.
Absolutely, absolutely agree. Of course, we need to give our patient the top level of services, ophthalmology services, and having the best of the best standard of care. But I really think that the most important thing that I really appreciate in this luxury brand master that I did is about the customer experience in our case, the patient experience, okay? Right. From the very first beginning, the very first telephone call, the relationship with your social networking, the website, all the little approach that you have in each moment of the whole of the patient is quite important for them. So try to create on them a wow effect, this situation that we need to begin to think as patient. Sometimes the problem that we have is difficult for us to think as patient. So if you create an empathy procedure of thinking like us, sitting in your waiting room and try to feel all the sensation, is better to understand all these situations that they have. They have concern, they have ideas, expectation that we need to resolve for them.
Right. We need to be CEO and surgeon. So tell me, how did you, what are the things you learned for your master's in business that you're now incorporating into your clinic there, the Q Vision?
Well, there's a huge of information that an MBA could give us, no? I really think if any young doctor that could see us, yes, he's thinking about how to develop his own practice, I really encourage him or she to develop an MBA. This incredible information is quite important. Having an idea about finance, how it would be quite important to take decision about the innovation technology, when and how could be great to acquire. Also in human resource, no, all the employees, how to encourage them, because you have a external customer at the patient, and we have an internal customer, our staff, our employees. So we need also to give them this incredible experience to the internal customer, our employees, our staff, in order to engage to the purpose and value that we want to transmit, create all these huge, clinic specifically focusing customer experience, try to share with our patient the best of the best, and try to, how to say, I really think the most important today is that the money comes after the value. The money is not the first thing. The money is not the first thing. The big mistake is focusing on money. I really think if you focus on creating value, honest value, then the money comes after that, for sure, and in a sustainability way, organic way, and forever, because you win the confidence of the patient, the people. So first of all, creating value, being honest, and then the success come after.
Right, for sure. I think these patients really appreciate it. And in my clinic, and I'm sure like yours, most of my new patients come from prior patients. Referrals, their friends, their family. It's the word of mouth. That's the strongest.
It's quite incredible, this situation. This medicine was from the very first beginning in Egypt, probably, in the epochs of the pharaohs, or the word of mouth. And right now is quite exactly the same. We move from a politics in marketing of doing marketing in newspaper, radio, or whatever, we move to experience marketing. So the best marketing is this customer experience, patient experience, try to treat them as an incredible sensation. So this patient are your best ambassador for your clinic, and they are going to prescribe a lot of friends, relative, and whatever. As you said, it's the best bet is our patient doing the right thing.
Right. And it starts even before they come to your clinic. It's when they call your clinic or contact through your website. It's when you do, in my clinic, we even email them a link to a video to watch before your visit. So you know exactly everything, what's going to happen. And then obviously the whole process, the surgery, and then even afterwards, we'll send a follow-up email, follow-up note, just to check in on them.
Absolutely. Quite interesting. That's, for sure, all of us, we have little tricks, you know, to engage our patient, people, with little tricks that we have in the whole of the patient. So, but I really think that idea, that culture, is the philosophy to growing adequately, no, with a virtuous way of creating the business, no, thinking about the best for them.
Yes, and once in the future, when we finally have a truly accommodating IOL that gives 4 or 5 diopters of accommodation, we will be so incredibly busy. Can you imagine?
Well, I really think this is for sure. This is the holy grail of all of us we are thinking about, no? The idea of an accommodative lens, having the 100% of the focus, whatever we want. I really think it's going to last. It's not this type of land, I don't perceive that could be very soon, but it would be incredible. But first of all, I really think we need to think in our patient to focus in safety and long term. You know, we more and more people are living more. The expectation of life is longer than ever. And we need to think in our procedure in the safety. Sometimes I perceive the idea that in papers, in evidence, we have outcomes, collecting data, 3-6 months, and that's all. So yeah. I really think it would be quite important to know the performance in 10-year, 15-year, because our patient is, they are going to live a lot of years, and we need this quite important information for us to take a decision. I was in Athens last weekend. I was talking with a specialist in keratoconus, and they told me, again, the cross-linking in the very long term continue flattening the cornea. So it would be quite important to have these long-term studies to know that could be the performance in the long term. So I really think this is quite important for the evidence that we could have this information.
Yeah, sometimes we often don't have long-term follow-up for these IOL patients. We have 1 month, 3 months, sometimes 6 months or 12, but very rare to have after that. And there are now, we're learning, right, late sequelae, late problems you could have. We learn now in the myopes, they have an increased retinal detachment risk forever, years later. Or we learned late, you know, bag and IOL dislocation. And these only happen after years, so we need that longer follow-up for sure.
Absolutely. We are seeing some different disease, no? According to that, the dead capsular bag. We were seeing this situation of operating in younger patients. Years ago, we operate cataract in a very old people. We were not thinking about operating refractive lens and change. So this would be interesting. Another important thing is how to manage the young presbyopia patients. Sometimes this would be another situation. We are seeing that we don't have the perfect, when we have a lot of solution, possible solution, it's because we don't have the perfect solution for some aspect. So we are seeing, but again, we are playing more or less in the same way, no? The spherical aberration, induction of some spherical negative spherical aberration, try to increase the depth of field. It's quite interesting because 20 years ago, we were talking about the supervision, no? The eagle vision, try to eliminate any spherical aberration, but now we are playing with an amount. It's quite interesting, this tendency in the industry, and it's quite interesting for us today. We are not very young people now. We have some years and white hair in our head, so it's quite interesting to take a look to our career and seeing how the innovation sometimes comes and goes. It's better not be the first people try to see what could be the performance, and it's interesting how the product sometimes comes and goes. No?
Right. Yeah, for those who don't know, the young ophthalmologist, 20 years ago, we had these new aspheric IOLs, monofocals, and so aim to balance out or negate the corneal positive aspheristicity with a little bit of negative aspheristicity on the IOL. So the overall image quality did improve significantly, but the depth of field decreased. So there's that complex relation. So now we have IOLs that are trying to increase or modulate the spherical aberration in order to get a trade-off of maybe not quite as crisp image quality, but a wider range.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So sometimes tendency, fashion, even happen in science, no? With that. Another quite interesting thing, Uday, we were talking recently with some colleagues, is about how 50 years ago, all the innovators were ophthalmologists. You can remember José Ignacio Barraquer, you can remember a lot of doctors developing innovation for us. Sometimes, right now, I really think, we can talk about not too much doctor in this field. Probably Susan Jacob or even you try to develop some innovation, but it's not usual. We're the common doctor, we are waiting for the industry to innovate. It's quite interesting also how to move. And another situation interesting, I don't know what is your situation there in the States, but in Europe, we have less opportunity for very young doctors to develop their own clinics. We have a lot of investment funds investing and buying chains of clinic. And right now, probably the only possibility to our young doctor here in Europe is the possibility of not being entrepreneur, but employees. So it's a little sad how also our profession, not only the specialty, all of us, our professional, could modify during the years. No?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think I'm so happy to be entrepreneurial and kind of work for myself and do things the way I want to do it. And sometimes when you work for a larger group as an employee, maybe one that's owned by private equity, you may not have those same opportunities. You may not have the same control.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So we are seeing all these challenges in the future. No, it would be sometimes it's difficult to see what could be the situation 5 years later, 10 years later. But all this tendency is quite could create this tendency, no, in our specialty.
For sure, for sure. Now, when a patient comes to your clinic, what are some of the important questions you ask them to determine if they'll be better for partial or full range lens?
Well, I really think that it's a patient for each lens, but it's also ophthalmology for each lens, okay? Yeah. If you don't have the possibility in your calculation of achieving ametropy, probably the full depth of field is not a good option for you because the full depth of field lenses need ametropy, that's all. Yeah. And for achieving, the key is how to improve your calculation. For sure, having an incredible staff that could have reliable data. Another theme would be using good formulas, and good formula after we have formula that use three parameters to calculate the ELP. All of the formula are good enough. Probably Barrett Universal could be the standard. It's quite different if we are talking about the extreme eyes, very short, very long of operated or refractive surgery is another question. The third and quite important is how to optimize the A constant. All the E constants of the lenses are referred to IL master. Historically, it refers to IL master. So if you have IL master, probably EOLCOM could be a good option to take a look of the A constant. But if you have another equipment, you need to optimize the A constant. And right now we have a very easy way to optimize with the methodology of Bonsanti. Bonsanti published in American Journal of Ophthalmology, a very easy way to optimize the A constant. And I really think if you want to implant full depth of field, this is the best way to achieving ametropy.
Right, for sure. I've also seen you've done a lot of work with the ESCRS online IOL calculator, which I think is very useful. That's where you can put in your data and you can have many different formulas calculate all at the same time. And also the move towards thick lens formulas for optimizing.
Absolutely. I really think it was a huge effort of our European society trying to give you all this possibility of creating with a cutting-edge formula to have all the formulas in the same software, try to develop the best calculation for you. So I really think it's a very useful skill for our decision.
Right, right. You've also developed an app, right, for IOL classifying?
That's right. Today, we are very excited with this application. It's called IOL Evidence. IOL Evidence is in for the Apple universe. You could have for iPhone, iPad, a Mac. And the idea is having all the scientific paper published in PubMed of each and every simultaneous vision lens. It's very easy to use. You could have directly in your iPhone, and you directly could see if somebody could see the performance of any lens. You could have the sum up, the summary of the outcomes published in literature. You could also have a ranking of the level of evidence of this specific study. And if you want to see, for example, what could be the performance was of a specific lens, and you have 40 studies, you could online or live directly made a meta-analysis to see what could be the performance of each aspect, efficacy of the lens, contrast sensitivity, whatever you want, you could create this meta-analysis. It's a huge effort, but I really think it's quite important for us to know exactly the performance of each lens.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Yeah, the ESCRS is doing a lot of fun things, a lot of interesting projects. As an American, very few Americans come to the ESCRS, the European meeting. You should go. I go every year. I actually like it more than the ASCRS. I find it's such an incredibly good meeting.
Well, Uday, you are a must for us in Europe. You are incredible. The young doctor are in love. You are like the Beatle when come to Spain. Every young doctor in Spain hoping to see your presentation, because even in Europe, sometimes we have some difficulties in the skill to learn how to operate, surgical skill, you know. And we want to make a big effort in how to teach them in the laboratory, okay? And also with your advice. It was amazing. Every time I could have the opportunity of seeing you, and we are going to have the lucky of having you in Spain.
Yes, in May, be there for sure.
The hall are full of people expecting this amazing way, didactic way of teaching how to develop adequately the surgery. So it's an honor to have you here in Europe and in Spain. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. I love to do it, love to travel. And I love to show videos where we learn from our errors, learn from our mistakes, learn from the complications, but also I like to teach all the secrets. There are a lot of little secrets out there, and I teach all of them so the whole world can have access right there on your mobile phone, anywhere you want to have it.
Yes, absolutely amazing, because sometimes even the senior doctor could learn a lot of interesting things, like how to avoid some problems. So great effort. Thank you very much.
Are you incorporating AI in any of your projects now or your clinic? And if so, what are you doing?
Yes, we are incorporating even in this application, in IR evidence, the way of creating the meta-analysis, the way also we have some advice. We have also another part of the application to give advice to the doctor according to some publication. So we create some prompts specifically to simultaneous vision lens to acquire the most important information that could help the doctor. For example, what could be the cutoff of high order aberration? If you ask me, again, give me only one parameter to avoid implanting simultaneous vision lens on patient, I would say high order aberration. High order aberration is the most useful parameter to try to avoid. If we have high order aberration above 0.5 microns, is very annoying implant on this patient because it's going to reduce all the defocus curve. Below 0.5, it could be acceptable. You have to see another parameter, another biometric factor. But for me, this is the main. And if you ask me, Joaquin, tell me some parameter that we could think in the past it was quite important, and in your opinion, it's not that important, I would say kappa angle. Mu chord,
yeah,
is not important at all in simultaneous Wilson's lane, it's quite important in refractive surgery in cornea, but not in simultaneous Wilson's lane.
Right, because a while back, people made a big deal about the chord mu or angle kappa angle, and they're saying, well, don't do it if it's above a certain level. But I also agree with you. I found that it doesn't make much difference.
Yes, we were the first group that began to publish that issue. And right now, more and more groups are publishing on that. That begins with the idea, the first paper, when it gives us the idea of a big angle kappa could create the possibility of having a little decentration of the lens. But the lens is not implanted in the cornu, in the algon kappa, is more effective for the capsular bar, decentration or decentration. So it doesn't matter in the simultaneous design.
Right. And then, as you said, what I found very important is, number one, you have to hit emmetropia. You cannot have residual refractive error. You cannot leave them with a diopter residual astigmatism. They're not going to be happy. And then also, if they have a large amount of irregularity in the cornea, too much higher order aberrations, the higher order aberrations of the cornea are just not compatible with these light splitting lenses.
Yes, absolutely. I really think it's not too much the parameter that could affect, but it's quite interesting. For example, you could listen a lot of colleagues telling us, be careful with myopic patients with simultaneous vision lens because they are accustomed to having a very good visual acuity for near. This is important, okay? They are accustomed to having a very good vision for near, but the problem is all on the anterior chamber. If we have shadow anterior chamber, the effective addiction of the lens is going to increase. So even an enhanced lens, good performance, like an extended in a very shadow anterior chamber. But if you have a deeper anterior chamber, the effective addition reduces, and this is the situation with a myopic patient of all we know, they used to have deep anterior chambers, so because of that, reduced the efficacy of the addiction. So all this situation is quite interesting also to know.
Yeah, they all play a role. Now, you also, I learned, do a lot of work with the Elena Bear Care Foundation, and you've done charity mission trips all over the world.
Well, Elena was my sensei, Uday. I really learned from her that compassion with people, helping people with any resource is incredible, because put yourself in the place that you need to be, you know, having this perception about the human factor. And it's all about that. It's all about people. Life is about people. And you can identify a lot of lesson coming of developing countries, like the perception of life, the happiness of the people not having anything in comparison with people in developed countries that we have everything, and sometimes we are not we don't achieve the happiness. And also is the perception of time. Uday, sometimes in developed countries, 5 minutes waiting is a nightmare, and the people get angry a lot, you know. Well, we could see people, very old people, waiting for us 2 or 3 years until we could achieve to the hospital, waiting and sleeping in the street, try to resolve their problem of blindness because cataracts. So sometimes you learn a lot in a developing country, in these amazing people that finally teach you more of the life that sometimes you could read in books or whatever.
Oh, I think I agree with you. I've done many surgical mission trips as well, and it's a really great learning experience about humanity, about people, connecting with people. Plus, you have an incredible skill set as an ophthalmologist, and you can change so many lives. And the other thing, if you're a young surgeon especially, do this trip because it'll make you a better surgeon. You get the most challenging, difficult cases, the dense cataracts, white cataracts, brunescent cataracts, and sometimes you don't have all the surgical things that you want. So you may not have the fanciest equipment, but you still have to do the surgery. So as a surgeon, it will make you a better skilled surgeon for sure.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, if only we could spend 1 week of our life each year, imagine all the doctors worldwide trying to spend 1 week resolving the preventable blindness in the world with all these people, because people blind in developing countries, they cannot live. They have to continue. Even people of 80 years old, they have to continue working. If they are blind, they cannot work, so they cannot earn their life. So I really think this is a main problem that we need to involve in the solution in some way. Only 1 week.
Yeah, it's incredible. The impact you make. One thing that surprised me on a trip was that the patients would come in, bilateral white cataracts, totally blind. But the grandmother would come with a young child the child is like the seeing eye child, helping the grandmother go wherever. And as soon as you fix grandma's cataracts, the child has freedom now. He can go, have fun. But otherwise, that poor child's job, this five-year-old child, full-time job is helping grandmother walk.
Yes, absolutely. So when you discover these little histories behind each patient, sometimes you have to operate a lot of people, you know, you operate 50 patients or whatever each day, and you don't have time. But the last day, we have the opportunity of talk with a patient, you know. It's difficult not to be touched for some histories, and you discover that worth this possibility of going at least 1 week, or like Elena that used to go each month. So it's knowing this type of person that give a lot of time for the other, for the people that they don't have anything. I really admire.
Yeah, it's amazing. Which countries have you been to with this foundation?
Well, in Latin America, all Central America, they have a huge problem. I was in Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala. They also have some problem around the safety with the maras, you know. It's a big problem. And in Africa, practically the whole Africa. All Africa, Senegal, Nigeria, Morocco, Congo, Mozambique, practically whole Africa. I really, you know, my first place was in Congo.
Okay.
It was quite difficult and quite hard, because when we finished, we were absolutely tired, and we take all the luggage, and we discovered in the middle of the hall, apparently a baggage that we have left. We went to take the baggage, and it was a very old woman that somebody led her to death inside. You know, it was horrible, absolutely horrible. So we have to talk with the nurse, the doctor, try to take her. But sometimes in Africa, you discover that sometimes life doesn't work, and you know, and it's very hard to discover all these things. So I really think we need to go there and trying to help them, to help the people, the normal people, people that they don't have anything there. So we need to continue with this movement and encourage the young doctor, because when you think that you go there to give health to the people, you discover that all these people that help you to build on you inside.
Right, right. It definitely goes both ways. It's beneficial for both.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely encourage you to do that. Now, a lot of young ophthalmologists love this podcast, and they want to know, what's some good MBA pearl or advice or takeaway that a surgeon can use to make his practice more successful? What advice do you have for a young surgeon?
I really think that that we said today, focusing on creating value. And creating value is about ethics. I really think this is not a thought coming from the goodness. Ethics is not coming of the boost of the of goodness or going to heaven. Okay, no, it's a business recommendation. If you do ethical things, take decision with ethics, you are going for sure to create value. And if you create value, people is going for sure to have confidence of you, and you are going to be incredible success. So first of all, ethic, because ethic create value, and value create profit. This is the way, not the opposite. So focusing on that, and then a lot of things, but this is the main idea to develop your career, not being a rush. When you do the right thing, the life reward you, the life give you a lot of grief. Be patient and do the right thing.
Right, I totally agree. When I look back on my career, to build momentum or build surgical volume is a very slow process. It does not happen quickly. You cannot go from zero to thousands of surgeries a year overnight or in 1 year. It takes a long time to build that.
Yes, absolutely. And be proud of yourself. It's quite nice. We are very lucky, Uday. We are very lucky of being ophthalmologists and helping people. And it's incredible when you return home, very tired but very proud of doing the right thing. Wow, this is a real wow effect. So, and having also the possibility, we were not too long ago, Uday, in South Africa, you and me, and sharing. We are freaky in some way. It's difficult to find some friend that could think like you in all this thing, and having time to share with the dear friend, dear colleague, all these thoughts about how developing your career, how to focus the new technology, all these things. It was amazing. So having fun with your colleague and having this opportunity of sharing with them ideas.
Oh, for sure. Like you said, life is about people. Life's about people, for sure. That's really probably the most important thing in this whole podcast, that life really is about people.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And if you put the people first, like you say, when you're treating patients in your clinic, if you put the value of every patient you're going to treat like your own family, they feel it, they know it, it's a great experience. They will help you build that word of mouth, and your clinic will be incredibly busy. That's the best way, for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Betty, probably talking about MBA, probably taking care, analyze perfectly what technology innovation you are going to acquire. Because if you don't acquire technology and innovation that could create value, they are going to be a barrier to develop value on your patient. So it's going to be a bad bet. So first of all, focusing on evidence your decision. Evidence is great because give you all the information about everything. You know, you only need to focus, read, and decide after reading all this evidence. So it's an incredible bet for your decision.
For sure. We'll put a link down below in the podcast for your app, which is IOL Evidence, which is fantastic. Well, that'll be linked down below. We'll also link your paper. We just talked about the classification. It was just actually published in JCRS this month.
Absolutely. This month is in open access, so everybody could access to it. Thank you very much, Uday, because the application, it has some free access and a pro access that all the profit go directly to the Elena Barraquer Foundation that is fighting about preventable blindness.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, we'll put all the links down below. I want to thank you. We've been talking for almost 1 hour now. Time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's very nice to see you again, Uday. I am very follower of your work.
Oh, you know, thank you.
Fans, a real fan with me, And we are expecting everybody in Spain and expecting you that you were, you know, the Beatles or whatever, Bruce Springsteen or whatever. So we are expecting you. We are going to have a great success. We are going to have excellent days here and treat you as you deserve today.
Oh, I'm looking forward to visiting your meeting in May in Spain. We'll have a great time. Thank you so much again. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you very much for your invitation, Uday. It was very nice.
I want to remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we got a new Cataract Coach podcast every Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google. Everywhere you find a podcast, you find the Cataract Coach podcast. We also have a new Cataract Coach video every single day, 2,900 videos and still going. This summer, we'll hit 3,000. So until next time, I'll catch you later.